This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I am your co-host, Ben.
And welcome back to part two of our Dennis Rader series, BTK. Just to kind of go over what we went over last time, we went over basic early childhood stuff where there doesn't really seem to be much in the way of known abuse anyway, which I'm still convinced he had to have witnessed something in his past, but he won't say anything about it. We talked about his first kill, which was actually his biggest one. It was a family of four, the Oteros. And then we ended up with Nancy Fox as our last victim that we discussed. And he did something a little bit different when he got finished with Nancy. After he strangled her, he called 911 and let the dispatcher
from
know exactly.
Phone.
A payphone. He wanted to make sure the police found her and that he was given the credit for it. So he's definitely big into getting his name out there and getting notoriety for these cases. So Nancy Fox was December 8th, 1977. And January 31st of 1978, he sent out a poem to the Wichita Eagle. It was written on an index card, and it began with, Shirley Locks, wilt thou be mine? And they weren't aware of the connection to Shirley Vian. They thought it was a Valentine's Day note, and the mail clerk actually forwarded it onto the paper's classified department. So not much was done there. Then February 10th, 1978, the threat was made public. So I don't know why it took them so long to come out with BTK and let people know that, hey, we've got a serial killer on our hands. I was like, what, 4 years? 74 is the first one. So that was 4 years later. So he was kind of pissed off that there wasn't much of a response to his last attempt. So he sent a more direct message to the KAKE TV station, which said, how many people do I have to kill before I get my name in the paper or some national attention? He even threw out, he gives himself his own nicknames. So some of the ones he said that he suggested, I guess he was going to let them pick or something, but he said nicknames included the BTK Strangler, the Wichita Hangman, and the Asphyxiator. Now, Wichita Police Chief Richard Lemunyan called a news conference to reveal for the first time the presence of the BTK Strangler in the area. And he said that we have no reason but to believe the individual has the capability to kill again, he warns. So that, I'm sure,
that's a clear assumption.
Yeah, but I'm sure that got everybody in a panic because Wichita apparently was not used to this kind of stuff.
I'm shocked that they
town.
Didn't go with the asphyxiator.
Ryan, I kind of like that, but you know, let's be BTK.
He's almost like
more
a superhero name, the asphyxiator. He's like, this guy sure was full of himself.
So after the public has been warned about him, April 28th, 1979, Anna Williams was actually Rader's intended victim. He was actually in her house waiting for her, but she took too long to come home. So he actually left. And less than 2 months later, she found out that she was actually going to be one of his victims because he sent her, well, some of her personal items and also a little note that says, oh, Anna, why didn't you appear?
Wow.
That would freak me the hell out to know
Yeah, that's
dude
something
has been in my
you would think
house.
about for life for sure, about what could have happened. I was thinking last time when we were going over the first episode, the people that will never know that they were his trolling subjects, because he said they didn't always materialize into the people that he actually attacked based on various reasons. But there were so many people out there that I'm sure like these serial killers are trolling that just never become the next victim, and you never know. It's terrifying, right?
Yeah, that would, I'd be getting an alarm system in my house if that
Yes.
were me.
Yes.
Most definitely. Now, in August, on August 14th, 1979, the cops actually released BTK's phone call. And basically, this was, they were trying to seek help from the public because they were hoping that somebody who
Voice.
listened, this is like the when they he reported the death of Nancy Fox, they were hoping that somebody would recognize his voice.
It's so sad that back in the 70s, sad for the BTK killer, not for the rest of the public, that he didn't have the capability at that point of like turning his voice digital, like you can probably do with a simple app from iPhones now, like making it a computer voice.
Yeah, but I mean, he could have disguised his voice, but he didn't.
Yeah. He wanted to not
I don't
necessarily
know if he, I don't think he wanted to get caught. He just wanted people to know, you know what? I'm the guy.
right. And I think ultimately, though, after he's caught, jumping way ahead, sorry, but
That's okay.
after he's caught, I don't think he's super sad about it because now he gets all the publicity and he gets the ability to, as we've been listening to, tell his whole spiel in court.
Yeah, but we'll get to the court thing in a minute because I have questions about that. But 1984, the Ghostbusters are formed. Why they call themselves that is beyond me because it's not like it's just weird to me. But it was the 80s, Ghostbusters was popular. It was basically the BTK task force that Chief Lemonyan established to hopefully be able to catch him. And the lead of that was some young guy named Ken Landwehr. Landwehr, I'm not sure how to pronounce it. He was basically the one organizing and taking control of all the evidence and things like that. So that was in 1984. Now we're going to jump back just a little bit because we've got another one of his victims. This was Maureen Hedge, and this was April 27th, 1979.
The day after my birthday, the day after plus 1 year. Not to date myself.
You kind of just did there, bro. So this is like 2 years after Nancy Fox. So he's been, I'm assuming, restraining himself. And well, he in between he's been sending letters to the news station and the Wichita Eagle and that kind of thing. And let
I
me go
wonder
ahead.
before you play. Like if there's something seasonal, right? Because I was noticing on the last date prior to that, right, was April 28th, 1979, was gonna be his next victim. And then this is the day before that. So he actually killed someone the day before and then attempted someone the next day. And then there was another one in April. No, there wasn't. That was in my head. My bad.
No, April 28th was when Anna Williams, when he got tired of waiting in Anna Williams' house.
Right,
So
but the
April
day
twenty
before that
seventh, yeah.
is when he killed someone else. So it's like,
Yeah.
I don't even think Bundy was killing necessarily people like the next day, right? Like, this guy's like,
Well,
what?
at the end he was because he was kind of in a frenzy.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the
He
Ripper
did
did the
Kai
same
Omega and
thing,
then went down
right?
the road and did,
Remember
I
the
think,
Ripper
another
did
one or
the
two.
same thing where he like was spacing him and then one day he had the double murder. I wonder if that's a thing. Like at some point, it escalates to the point where you just need the fix so bad you've got to do it like real quick.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, possibly, unless my dates are wrong, I could have, it's, I don't know. I may have accidentally put the wrong date in. I'm not sure. I don't think so, but it is possible.
Yeah, it just seems real risky, police-wise, to do it again the next day.
Well, this is like number eight. Maureen Hedge would be victim number eight. So he's already killed like seven people prior and
Yeah.
not
He's getting
been
good at
caught.
it,
So
right?
he may think he's invincible at this point or just untouchable.
with premeditation by strangulation, inflicting injuries from which Marine Hedge did die on April 27th, 1985. Can you tell me what occurred on that day?
Okay, yep, I got the date wrong. So it was April 27th,
85. 85, okay.
I don't know why I put 79 in my notes. That was my bad, people. My bad. It was 85. So we're current.
Well, actually, kind of like the others, she was chosen. Went through the different phases, stalking phase. And since she lived down the street from me, I could watch the coming and going quite easily. On that particular date, I had another commitment. I came back from that commitment, parked my car over at Woodlawn and 21st Street at Bowling Alley.
What I think is interesting about this guy is that he talks about he had other commitments. So
yeah, I thought that was weird too.
It's just like his to-do list. Okay, I got to go to the grocery store. I need to go kill Marine Hedge.
Right.
I've got a PTA meeting later. It's just
right. I thought the exact same thing. Not just that it's just another check off his list, but also that it's like he's still this upstanding citizen who's he's doing his responsibilities. It's like I had an engagement I couldn't get out of, so I didn't take care of that.
Yeah, it's
weird.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if this guy has any kind of temperament at all. I think he just acts like it's just everything's fine all the time,
yeah.
Even when he's killing.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for this will be an odd statement, but if it wasn't for the DNA that's tied him to it, mm-hmm. I would almost think, given his demeanor and the way that he talks about being so courteous and so like in like taking care of his business, his responsibilities, he's got a wife, he's got kids, he's a head person at his church, he's doing mm-hmm. other things. You said he was a Boy Scout leader, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. He's a Boy Scout leader. I would almost think he was someone that had one of those disorders that makes you actually falsely confess. However, he has been DNA tied to the crimes and definitely was the killer, but he almost seems like somebody who didn't really do it.
Well, until he starts talking.
Well, yeah, I mean, he gives so much information as well, right?
Yeah.
He's got detailed information about the crimes. It's just that, like you said multiple times, it's unnerving how there's no passion in these crimes. Like,
right.
He's not worked up about it. He's not getting excited about it. You would think since this, as he said over and over and over again, these crimes give him sexual pleasure.
Yeah.
You would think in court he would be, like, starting to get excited. I'm not saying he's going to, like, pop a Woody in the middle of court. I'm saying he'd be like, and then I put a bag over his head. And then, but he's like, no, then I put a bag over his head. Right?
He may just be one of those, like, monotone people. My brother's the same way. He's very flat.
Yeah. Well, and looking at the videos, too, his face doesn't change either. He's just kind of...
Oh, no. Chill. It's blank.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it's something I did.
There at that time. Before that, I dressed until I had some other clothes on. I changed clothes. I went to the bowling alley. Went in there. The precincts of bowling. Called a taxi. Had a taxi take me out to Park City. Had my kit with me. There's a bowling bag.
All right, that was Park City in Sedgwick County,
yes,
Kansas.
Sir. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
All right, you had the taxi take you to Park City. What happened then?
There, I asked. I pretended that I was a little drunk. I just took some beer and washed it around my mouth, and the guy could probably smell the alcohol on me. I asked, told him to let me out so I could get some fresh air, and I walked from where the taxi let me off over to her house.
All right, where does she live?
62, 54, North Independence.
Who cares?
All right, when you walked over there, what happened next?
Well, as before, I was going to have sexual fantasies, so I brought my hit kit, and lo and behold, her car was there. I thought, gee, she's not supposed to be home. So I very carefully snuck into the house, kind of like a cat burglar, and after checking the house, she wasn't there. So about that time, the doors rattled, so I went back to one of the bedrooms and hid back there in one of the bedrooms. She came in with a male visitor. They were there for maybe an hour or so. He left, I waited till wee hours of the morning and then proceeded to sneak into her bedroom and flip the lights on real quick, like, or I think the bathroom lights. I didn't want to flip her lights on, and she screamed, and I jumped on the bed and strangled her manually.
All right. Now, were you wearing any kind of disguise or mask at this time?
No, no.
You indicated this woman lived down the street from you. Did she know you?
Casually, we'd walk by and wave. She liked to work in her yard as well as I like to work. It's just a neighborly type thing. It wasn't anything personal. I mean, just a neighbor.
That's right, ballsy.
So she was in
your neighbor.
Bed when you turn on the lights in the bathroom.
Yeah, the bathroom. Yeah, so I could get some light in there.
All right, what did you do then?
Oh, I manually strangled her when she started to scream.
So you used your hands?
Yes, sir.
And you strangled her. Did she die?
Yes.
All right. What did you do then?
After that, since I was in the sexual fantasy, I went ahead and stripped her, and probably went ahead and I'm not sure if I tied her up at that point in time. But anyway, she was nude, and I put her on a blanket, went through her purse, some personal items in the house, figured out how I was going to get her out of there. Eventually moved her to the trunk of the car. Took the car over to Christ Lutheran Church. This is with the older church. And took some pictures of her.
All right. You took some photographs of her. What kind of camera did you use?
Poor Lord.
Did you keep those photographs?
Yes, the police probably have them.
All right. What happened then?
That was it. She went through. I tied it. She was already dead, so I took pictures of her in different forms of bondage, and that's probably what got me in trouble, was the bondage thing. So anyway, that's probably the main thing. But anyway, after that, I moved her back out to the car, and then we went east on 53rd.
All right, what occurred then,
sir?
What happened then?
Oh, trying to find a place to hide her, hide the body.
Did you find a place?
Yes, I did.
Where?
Couldn't tell you without looking at a map, but it was on 53rd, Queen Greenwich, maybe. Maybe, what's the other one, Queen Greenwich? Rock. Webb. I think between Webb and Greenwich, I found a ditch, a low place on the north side of the road, and hit her there.
All right, you say you hit her there?
Well, there were some trees, some brush, and I laid that over the top of her body.
All right, so you removed the body from the car, put her in the ditch, and then laid some brush over the body.
Yes, sir.
All right. Sir, in count 9, it is claimed on or about the 16th day of September, 1986, in Sedgwick County, Kansas.
So much weirdness, right? Like, again, not to drive the same nail in over and over again, but he starts this with, I played 3 rounds of golf, or not golf, but 3 rounds of bowling. I had my kids, like normal dad, right? Then, like, I just found it. None of this is humorous. I would get like, this guy's horrible. But the fact that the judge is like, "Did you find somewhere to hide the body?" And he's like, "Oh yes, yes, I did." It was like the most. It was the
he
most emotion
happy
he showed
it.
So far.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
super happy. He's like, "Yes, thank you for asking. I did. I took care of that."
Yeah.
Very odd.
You know, he's definitely an odd one because he doesn't, I don't want to say humiliate the corpses, because, I mean, obviously he does with the bondage, but it's just like, when you hear him talk about it, he just seems careful. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, he's careful, but like you said earlier, this case, way too ballsy. Like, this is his neighbor. This is down the street from where he lives. Everyone in this neighborhood recognizes him. He's got no mask. He puts her corpse in the car, drives to some location, a church, to put her in bondage position. I mean, like, he had to put the body in the car and drive away from his own neighborhood.
Well, I mean, she could have had a garage.
In a garage.
Yeah. So that would have been one way, but I mean,
but even
you would think
even
people
somehow,
would notice him driving,
right? Even if somehow someone sees you in the car, they're like, "Why is he in his neighbor's car? What is it? What's happening?" Right?
Right. Yeah, it's.
He did say it was the wee hours of the morning.
Well, that's true. That's true. So most people be in bed, but it's still. I mean, that's. That's like murder 101. You don't do somebody that you know, even if it's casually.
Yeah.
Now, the next one was 6.5 years later. He
Wow.
didn't commit any crimes for 6.5 years, at least none that we know of.
I
And it
wonder if
was.
he was like thinking, all right, I got a little too close to home there. Let me space this out.
Well, it's possible, yeah. Even if he was kind of worried about that, 6.5 years. You know,
It's a
that's a
long
long
time.
time. That's
It's
a
a long
long
time.
cooling off period, yeah.
Yeah.
But his next victim was Vicky Wegerle.
Again, Vicky was regularly was another potential victim. I went through those different phases, locked in on her, as I would call it, and decided that I would try that date. I used a ruse as a telephone repairman to get in their house. Drove there in my own personal car
Oh.
around lunchtime, during lunch hour, or approximately that time. It was earlier in the morning than that, and. I actually went somewhere else and changed my clothes, what I call my hit clothes, and
Hit clothes.
hit clothes. Basically different, you know, things that I'd need to get rid of later. Not the same kind of clothes that I had on. I don't know what other better word to use it. Crime clothes or hit clothes. I just call them hit clothes. Anyway, I walked from my car as a telephone repairman. As I walked there, I donned the telephone helmet. I had a briefcase. Went to one other address just to kind of size up the house. I'd walked by it a couple times, but I wanted to check it a little bit more. As I approached it, I could hear a piano sound. And went to this other door, knocked on them, and told them we were recently working on telephone repairs in the area. And went to her and knocked on the door and asked her if I could come check her telephone lines inside.
Did she allow you in?
Yes, she did.
What happened then?
Went over and found out where the telephone was, simulated that I was checking the telephone. I had a make-believe instrument, and after she was looking away, I drew a pistol at her and asked her if she'd go back to the bedroom with me.
Is this the same 357 Magnum you'd used
No,
earlier?
this was a different one.
Different pistol. Are you asked her to go back to the bedroom with you after drawing the
Asked her.
pistol on her?
Yes, sir.
What
Right.
happened then?
I told her, we went back to the bedroom, I told her I was going to have to tie her up. She was very upset, and I think I used some material that was in, and that's another thing. I'm not sure, but I think I used the material that they had in their bedroom. And after I tied her hands, she broke that, and we started fighting. And we fought quite a bit back and forth.
All right, she was physically fighting you.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
What happened then?
Finally, got the hand on her and got a nylon sock and started strangling her.
Wrapped the stocking around her neck.
Yes.
What happened then?
I finally gained on her and put her down, and I thought she was dead, but apparently she wasn't. But after she was down and not moving anymore, I rearranged her clothes a little bit and took some quick photos. I think three of them, if I remember. And then after that, there was a lot of commotion. She had mentioned something about her husband coming home, so I got out of there pretty quick. The dogs were raising a lot of cane in the back. The doors and the windows were all open to the house. There was a lot of noise when we were fighting. So I left pretty quickly after that. Put everything in the briefcase and had her. I'd already gone through her purse and got the keys to the car and used their car for my getaway car.
All right, now you indicate that you thought that she was dead. Did you discover later that she was not dead?
Yes, I guess the paramedics arrived and they tried to attempt to relieve her, revive her. That failed. I don't know if she died there or on the way to the hospital or at the hospital. I don't recollect.
But you later found out that she did die as a result of your strangulation.
Yes.
Now, sir, let's turn to count 10.
Now, didn't he say he went there in his personal vehicle, but then
Yeah.
he used her car as the getaway car? He left his car there?
He would have had to come back to get it.
Yeah. It's
I'm just
weird.
wondering how you can strangle somebody and then they can die later.
Yeah, you think if you pull through that, you're pulling through, but I don't know.
Well,
Maybe brain dead or something like
yeah, that's what
that.
I was thinking. Yeah, maybe the brain damage was just too much. She didn't have enough oxygen to her brain for a certain amount of time. So, Vicky Wegerle is dead, unfortunately. And now we go almost 5 years, actually a little over 5 years for his next one. So maybe it's because he's getting older.
I was going to say the exact same thing. His like desires are getting fainter. Like, I mean, just
I don't know
normal
about
people. That's.
desires. I'm thinking more like just old age, and that this probably takes a toll on you, you
I
know?
mean, it probably does physically take a toll, but I mean, all of us, our sexual desires, well, not women. You guys are luckier in that regard, but like, get weaker. Like, it's not the same being like a 20-year-old guy and a 40-something-year-old guy, and he's getting up there to where maybe he doesn't need these fantasies fulfilled quite as often.
That's true. Or I mean, maybe it's also that he's able to get them fulfilled by himself,
Yeah.
just as
He's getting
easily.
better at that portion.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's
maybe.
very, it's not, I was gonna say that, like, I almost, before you said it was gonna be like, not something you want to think about, but he might be getting a little bit
Well,
more
God, after
skilled in
if
his self
he's been
gratifications.
thinking about this since puberty, so I would assume he'd be like a
Super awesome at it, right?
master at it by
And
now, you know?
as weird as it is, and like, sorry for her to have to think about this. I believe Annette Funicello is still alive, but maybe his primary focus is still Annette Funicello. Maybe no one lives up to that at home vision of Annette.
Oh, poor Annette, if that's the case. Oh, Lord. But Dolores Davis, she is his 10th and final victim. And she was killed on January 19th, 1991.
That particular day, I had some commitments. I left
Commitments.
those, went to one place, changed my clothes, went to another place, parked my car, finally made arrangements on my hit kit, my clothes, and then walked to that residence. After spending some time at that residence, it was very cold at night. Had reservations about going in. I had cased the place before, and I really couldn't figure out how to get in, and she was in the house, so I finally just selected a concrete block and threw it through the plate glass window on the east and came on in.
All right, where is this residence
So
located?
that's quiet.
It's on Hillside, but I couldn't give you address. I know it's probably 61, probably 62 something. Oh, 62 something.
North or south?
North Hillside.
All right, so you used a concrete block to break the window?
Plate glass window, patio door.
What happened then?
Noise. I just went in. She came out of the bedroom and thought that a car had hit her house, and I told her that I used the ruse of being wanted. I was on the run. I needed food, car, warm up, and I asked her. I handcuffed her and kind of talked to her. Told her that I would like to get some food, get her keys, her car, and kind of rest assured. Talk with her a little bit. Calmed her down a little bit, and then eventually I checked. I think she was still handcuffed. I went back and checked out where the car was. Simulated getting some food, odds and ends in the house that I like. I was leaving. And then went back and removed her handcuffs and then tied her up. And then eventually strangled her.
You say eventually strangled her. What?
Well, after I tied her up. I went through some things in the room there and then strangled her.
You say you went through, were you looking for something?
Well, some personal items, yes. I took some personal items from there.
Did you take personal items in every one of these incidents?
I did on the hedge. I don't remember anything of Vicky's place. The Ocheros, we got the watch and the radio. I don't think I did any of Brights. Vian's, no, I don't think so. Fox, yes, I took some things from Fox. It was hit and miss.
All right, but in
Probably
regard.
if it was a control situation where I had more time, I took something, but if it was a confusion and other things, I didn't, as I was trying to get out of there.
Right, so in regard to the Davis matter, you went around the room, took a few personal things. What did you do then?
Strangled her.
What did you strangle her with?
Pantyhose.
All right, what happened then? Did she
I
die?
kind of like Mrs. Hedge. I already figured out I had a plan on leaving and put her in a blanket and drove her to the car, put her in the trunk of the car.
So you were able to strangle her to death with these pantyhose?
Yes, sir.
All right, you put her in your car.
In her car. The trunk of her car.
What happened then?
I really had a commitment I needed to go to, so I moved her to one spot, took her out of her car. This gets complicated. Then the stuff I had, clothes, gun, whatever, I took that to another spot in her car, dumped that off. Okay. Then took her car back to her house, left that. Let me think now. Okay. In the interim, I took her car back to her house. In the interim, I realized that I had lost one of my guns. I dropped it somewhere. So I was, we saw it, trying to figure out where my gun was. So I went back in the house, realized I had dropped it when I went in the, when I broke the plate glass window. It dropped and fell on the floor right there, and I found it right there. So that solved that problem. Anyway, I went back out, threw the keys, checked the car real quick, and threw the keys up on top of the roof of her house, walked from her car back to my car, took my car, drove it back, and I either dropped more stuff off or I picked her up and put them in my car. And then I drove up northeast of Sedgwick County and dropped her off underneath the bridge.
So all of these incidents, these 10 counts, occurred because you wanted to satisfy a sexual fantasy. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've heard about all of his kills now in very boring fashion.
Yeah. Very weird. Now, is this all his initial kills, or is this including the one after he comes back after the article?
He doesn't have a kill after the article.
He doesn't?
Mm-mm.
I thought he did.
Mm-mm. Okay, so after his, after his 10th and final kill, he's quiet again for a while. In January of 2004, the Wichita Eagle, they ran a 30th anniversary piece on him. It was the 30th anniversary after the Oteros were killed. They printed an article. They recalled the terror that BTK wielded in the 70s and suggested that he had faded from memory after so many years. And this pretty much is what spurred BTK to later emerge, thanks to his ego. His ego wasn't getting enough attention, I suppose. So March 19, 2004, BTK announces his return. He again sends a note to the Wichita Eagle from Bill Thomas Killman, BTK, containing a copy of Vicki Weggerly's missing driver's license, photos of her body, and BTK's distinctive signature, which linked her unsolved murder to BTK and declares the Wichita terror to be very much alive. In May 5th, 2004, he teases with a puzzle. So he's doing his best to reach out to the public again. Now, in his next outreach, he mailed a phony ID, chapter titles for a BTK biography, and a find-the-word letter grid spelling out clues like prowl and fantasies to the KAKE TV station. The people who were dealing with the sluice later realized that letters R-A-D-E-R are grouped around the number 6220, which was his street address. So that's in itself pretty ballsy, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I like, that's why I say, like, feel part of him wanting to get caught, but not like he wanted to get caught because he felt guilty. But like we were saying, he wanted to get caught because he wants all the credit for all this. Cause like,
oh yeah,
if he never gets caught, no one ever knows that Dennis Rader is BTK.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, he wants BTK to live in infamy, which unfortunately it will now. So January 25th rolls around. This is 2005. Postcard points to more clues. This time, this postcard led the police to a cereal box that was on a roadside outside of Wichita, containing a graphic description of BTK's first murders and another doll fashioned in a death position. There's another part of the postcard which inquires as to whether his package was found at the local Home Depot that proves, well, it kind of got authorities thinking. After poking around the store, investigators learned that one employee had found a cereal box in the bed of his pickup truck, and a search of the trash produces the box and a message asking if BTK could communicate via a computer floppy disk without being traced. If so, the police are instructed to run a newspaper ad with the message, "Rex, it will be okay." Now, this is where
his ignorance shows.
Yeah, because, I mean,
like, they're going to be like, "No, I'm sorry, no, we'd be able to trace you. Don't do that."
Yeah. You will definitely be caught if you send us a floppy disk.
He's just an odd fellow. He's so odd. I mean, because, as you said, he's got no particular anger displayed in any of these crimes. And then when he's talking about even like the last victim where he said, "She was upset, so I calmed her down." You're about to murder her. Why the F do you care about calming her down?
Right.
This guy doesn't want people to be mad. Multiple of these cases, he said, and then she got really mad. Well, yeah, she's really mad. You're like, or really scared. And it's like almost like he's surprised that they're mad, surprised that they're upset, surprised that they're scared. It's like he has no emotions and he doesn't understand when other people do. He's just very bizarre. Like, yeah, my whole point of that is I feel like he doesn't. I almost want to say autism. This is like, I feel like he doesn't think that the police would lie to him. If they say, "No, you can't get caught from that," then he's like, "Of course, that's the truth."
That or he's
and
just
the lack
dumb.
Of emotion.
I mean, I'm thinking more like Jekyll and Hyde, you know, because the good part makes sure they're comfortable and, you know, tries to reassure them while the bad part kills them. You know.
Yeah, and the only reason I say autism is obviously most people with autism do not commit crimes. So I'm not saying that that's a thing. It's just because that there's a lack of empathy and emotion involved with autism. And it's not because they're bad people. It's because they don't understand it. Yeah. And I almost feel like Dennis Rader doesn't understand emotion.
I'm thinking if we were going to go along the case of autism, maybe more like Asperger's type.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, because it's highly functional, so it would be Asperger's. Yeah. But there's definitely some sort of disconnect when it comes to his own emotions and other people's emotions.
Yeah, that just may be the psychopath part where, you know, there's no empathy or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, but the psychopath generally gets off on the other person's fear. He almost doesn't understand it, doesn't want it to be occurring. He's got to get rid of it. He's like, no, calm down. You're going to be fine. Right? Like a psychopath would not care that you're terrified unless, which Rader doesn't seem to be like displaying this at all. But I would see a psychopath could calm you down because they get the thrill of just kidding. Now I'm going to murder you. But he has no emotion. I think he really is just like, don't be upset. You're okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's odd. Yeah. Odd is the only way I can classify him.
I mean, he's just even super polite to the judge. I mean, the judge is like, then what happened next? And he's like, oh yeah, well then this happened. And it's like, and the judge calls him, it's like, what do you mean hit outfit? And he's like, oh, that's the way I talk about it. It's like, talk about it to who? Who are you discussing your hit outfit with? Nobody. This is probably the first time you've ever said it.
The voice is in his head.
Right. Or unless, I mean, he could have been saying hit outfit when he's writing like his manuscript, right? To it with the cereal boxes and stuff.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, he might have used it before, but it's just super polite to the judge. The judge, like, where does she live? It's like you said, who cares? I could see like a jerk killer being like, why the F do you care? I killed her, right? Like, but this guy's like, oh, it was what was it again? It was 5240 something street, right?
I mean, like, unless that was just another way for him to prove that he did it.
Yeah, I think that's the whole point of that whole, the judge having him go through it all, is to make sure he did all these crimes, which clearly he did, but it's like super polite, super respectful, asks his lawyers questions frequently throughout, like, hey, what was it? Because so they could double check facts for him. It's like, he's just not your normal killer.
No.
Not at all, right? I mean,
Ted Bundy, when he's defending himself and whatnot, he's making an ordeal in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah, he actually got married.
Right, he got
his
married.
Court trial.
He was fantastical. He was like the ringleader of the court.
He was a showman. He was an absolute
showman, exactly. But Dennis is like nothing, man. Like no emotion.
Here's what happened. Let's just go to jail now.
Yeah, very odd.
Yeah, it was. So the Rex, it'll be okay, is how they told him. And they said, contact me at P.O. Box, first four reference numbers at 67202. And 6 days later, BTK confirms his receipt of the message through another postcard sent to the TV station. Now, February 16th, 2005 is when that little floppy disk breaks the case open. So,
of course it does.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know.
Because they lied.
No, cops would never lie. Come on now.
I mean, to stop a serial killer? she's no longer with us? My grandma would lie to stop a serial killer. Of course the police lied.
Yeah, my grandma probably would have too, yeah. So the computer disc arrived by mail. It's relayed to Cybercop Randy Stone, who uncovers BTK's message about checking an index card for more information, along with hidden metadata that reveals the disc to have been used by a dentist at Christ Lutheran Church in Park City Library. Yeah. And within seconds, an internet search for Christ Lutheran Church reveals the name of its president, Dennis Rader. So they already had DNA evidence carefully preserved, from the previous crime scenes. And Lieutenant Landwehr, the guy who was in charge of the Ghostbusters, they could have come up with a better name for that, sorry. His team learned that Rader's daughter, Carrie, had been in the hospital for a pap smear. And the hospital turned over a sample of her DNA, which matches that of BTK. I mean, obviously not, familial-wise anyway. And February 25th, 2005, they arrested Rader. He was actually heading home from the office to have lunch with his wife, and he's pulled over by a line of police cars trailing him and taken into custody. He confessed after being confronted with the DNA evidence and enjoyed what he believes is a bonding session with law enforcement agents, although he is plainly irritated that Landwehr lied to him about the security of communications via computer disk. Hey, there's some emotion. He got mad that they lied.
Right, but inappropriate emotion. Like, of course they lied to you, you idiot. Like, what do you mean? You're like, that's what I mean. Like, he really did not think that these people could lie.
No. Yeah, it's really... Oh, poor guy. That's horrible. I should not say poor guy. He's a killer.
Right. But his emotion was probably like this. Just so you guys know, I'm a little upset with you. Why are you upset with us, Dennis? I mean, you guys told me I couldn't get caught from that floppy disk. Just, I'm a little upset.
Oh, my God. It's awesome. Oh, I actually would like to see that. How he, his actual response to that.
Right.
I can't imagine him.
I mean, he didn't yell or scream. He was like, I'm a little bit perturbed.
Maybe he did. I don't know. You never know. We don't know. Should reach out to that Landwehr guy and find out.
He saw the string of police cars behind him. He's like, shit, I think they got me. Or he's like, this could be just, maybe I have a taillight out.
Oh, yeah, with a string of cars. Well, who knows what goes on that guy's head. So they announced his arrest at Wichita City Hall the following day. Of course, everybody applauded because, yay, the serial killer's caught. April 19th, 2005, he waives his right to a preliminary hearing. The scheduled hearing ends after a few short minutes and acknowledgement from the defense that the state possesses enough evidence to send the case to trial. 2 weeks later, Silent Rader has the judge enter a not guilty plea for him. So this is in April. Now, June 27th of 2005, Rader pleads guilty to the BTK killings, which, from what I understand, was a surprise. So Rader provides the court with explicit details, which we just heard, on how he selected, stalked, and finally killed each of his victims. His lawyer later notes that they went with the plea guilty due to overwhelming evidence against their client and the lack of firm legal footing on which to enter an insanity plea. Which, Kansas didn't have the death penalty at this time. So I don't know why he didn't just go with a trial hearing, because, I mean, he could have. I mean, I doubt very seriously he would have gotten off with the evidence.
Right,
but
it's like rolling the dice. Like you said, they're not going to be able to give him the death penalty, so it couldn't be worse than the 10 consecutive sentences.
Yeah,
sentences that he got. So, I mean, he could have, but I really feel like he's like, I don't want to risk that off chance that like people think it wasn't me, because he so much wants the publicity.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, or maybe there is a small part of him that didn't want his family to go through it. Because he did have a daughter.
Yeah.
And a wife. And, but I mean, that's.
I mean,
very
they still had to
unusual.
Go through it, of course. But like,
well, yeah.
On the off chance, somehow he gets off. I feel like in most circumstances, unless you're clearly innocent, which he's not, but like it's not like you're going back to your wife and kids and it's like nothing happened, right? Like that life is over.
Oh,
he's not
well, yeah,
gonna go back and be president of the church anymore. No
yeah,
one's gonna let
yeah.
him be the Boy Scout leader anymore.
Oh god, no. Oh Lord.
So I mean, he's almost better off in prison at that point.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's really, and from what I understand, serial killers are supposed to be like the popular ones in prison. I don't know. I've never been there, so I don't know. August 18th, 2005, Rader is sentenced to 10 consecutive life terms in prison. The two-day sentencing hearing features testimony from investigators who describe Rader's documentation of his torture-fueled sexual fantasies. Of course, emotional pleas from the victims' families and an apology from the convicted killer who expresses hope that the families will one day forgive him.
That's interesting.
I wonder if he actually meant that and is delusional enough to think, yeah, they'll forgive me one day.
Yeah.
That's just weird. And it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like he probably, like I said, I don't feel like he's in touch with his emotions at all. But how hard is it to give an apology, even if you don't mean it, right? Like, maybe he's just like, it'll make them feel better. Let me just be like, I'm sorry. Right. Or maybe he truly meant it, but he just doesn't seem like the guy that has that deep of emotions to me.
I don't know. It's weird, you know, because I mean, I watched Gary Ridgway when they did the victim impact statements, and one of his, the father of one of his victims actually got up and said that he forgave him. Gary Ridgway, and Ridgway started crying.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I mean, it looked genuine, sincere, and it was the only person that moved him to tears.
Yeah.
You just don't think of serial killers having that kind of emotion.
I think some of them are just super broken people, right? And they know that, and they don't necessarily want to do the things they're doing. I mean, yes, a lot of them are sociopaths that like don't have that kind of feeling, but that's why I feel like BTK's got something else going on, because if he's telling the truth that nothing traumatic happened in his childhood, he has to have been born with some sort of lack of emotion, right? To be able to go through all this so calmly, so chill, never have any sort of reaction, and just be so matter of fact about it, and still maintain a completely normal life in almost every regard, right? This is the neighbor that if you saw at the grocery store, you'd be like, hey, what's up, Dennis? Hey, not much. See you at church on Sunday. Like, hey, thanks for taking care of my kid this weekend at the retreat in the woods you teach them how to tie knots. And, you know, like, this is like a totally normal dude.
Yeah.
Except that he's got like no emotion and is able to do crazy stuff. Right. So I don't feel like he would ever cry at an impact statement. I think that there are some people who don't want to do the things they're doing. I don't think that Dennis Rader sees any value to life. I think that's why he was able to kill puppies and kittens, and a lot of them did, like a Bundy. Oh. But like, I think he doesn't see value in life. I don't think he thinks that his crimes, when he's doing them, I don't think he went home feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. I just destroyed a life. I think he's like, life isn't valuable. It's all good. Right. So I think they're two different mentalities.
Well, I don't know if it's that as so much as, you know, he doesn't see his victims necessarily as people. They're just those sexual play toys.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
like something you can
too.
Buy
Although
in a store.
He did stalk them long enough that he's looking in their mailbox. He knows their names, right? He's.
Yeah.
I mean, give it usually. What was it? A Silence of the Lambs, right? Where like she's kidnapped and they're like, say her name, because they want. I believe it's that movie. It might have been a different one, but they said that the killer is probably not seeing her as a person. But if you say her name, now they have to realize that she's. He knows their names, right? Like,
okay, I gotta cut you off here for a minute because that was not how it happened in Silence of the Lambs. I just watched this 2 days ago.
Okay.
The last victim that Buffalo Bill had in the pit, her mom was a senator, and she was on TV saying her name over and over again. And the guys
right.
at the BAU were
right.
like, "Oh, that she's smart. That's a good thing. She's
right
trying to."
But it was so
her.
That he had to put a face to. He had to make her a human in his
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, except he wasn't actually watching that press conference.
No, and so. Buffalo Bill was disturbed as heck. He didn't. He wouldn't have cared.
No.
But you know what I'm saying? Like Raider,
he did love his dog though, which
names
was weird.
On his own. Right, like he's not worried about your name.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an odd case. I mean, he's obviously never going to get out of prison because he's not eligible for parole for 175 years. So, unless he's superhuman,
where is he? Is he in Kansas still? Any clue?
I don't know. That's a good question.
He might be your next pen pal.
I don't think he writes to people like Gary Ridgway. He only sends like. Jesus pamphlets back to people.
It's odd that if Dennis isn't writing to people just because he cared about publicity so much, you think now he'd be lonely. But like you said, maybe he's like a big star in the prison and that's his little world and he doesn't need us.
He is in Kansas. He is in the El Dorado Correctional Facility.
El Dorado. Interesting.
I could try to write him.
You could. I mean... say we did an episode on like he's you know how like for Shayna Huber's right you kind of want to keep the podcast on the down low and just approach her in a friendly manner. This guy definitely be like, hey, we're doing a podcast about you, want to get your name out there, buddy.
Yeah, I mean he seems to like the publicity, so that I don't know, maybe he might write back. I mean that would I should probably get a PO box so if I'm gonna start doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
The problem not with, use my
with
home
the
address.
Creator is he's probably getting like minimum of 100 messages a day.
Well, that's what scares me about writing to these people, because you know these fucked up serial killers have fucked up fans
yeah.
who are out and about. And I'm thinking maybe get a PO box a couple cities away from where I live. Just be on the same side.
Yeah.
If I start doing that. Because I swear, I'm almost willing to bet money that Charles Manson still has a quote-unquote family out there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's possible the family is still there. All right. Thank you, Poddington the Bearers, for joining us for the final installment of Dennis Rader, a.k.a. the BTK killer. We appreciate your listens, as always.
And, as always... If you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is throughtheabysspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram at abysspodcast1.
Spotify.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss Podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.